but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos.
Hello, and welcome to the fourth and last episode of the Nuclear Physics Podcast. Next time we'll start with electricity, but let's concentrate on what we're going to learn this episode. In this episode, we're going to learn about the effects of radiation on the human body. We're going to learn about measuring that radiation and also things about how powerful that radiation is. Now, let me first begin to describe some of this radiation. Radiation is very wide and very different. This radiation ranges from something that can be very harmless to something that can be very harmful. And I guess the main key and the key point behind it is to understand that some of this radiation can be ionizing and some of this radiation can be non-ionizing. Now, we learned in previous episodes that ionizing means that it interacts with atom. The ability for that radiation to take away electrons to interact with the nucleus. And non-ionizing means that this radiation could be harmless. To give an example of some of this harmless radiation, let's look at things like TV and radio waves. Now, they're described as non-ionizing. In fact, we live with this radiation all the time. We always walk through radio waves, TV waves, and even microwaves, which is usually the main mode of communication for mobile phones. This radiation doesn't tend to interact with atoms in our body. But when we look at different types of radiation, such as alpha, beta, gamma, or UVC radiation, that begins to interact with the atoms in our bodies and can be harmless to all of us. In fact, you'd be very surprised to hear that some everyday items have got the ability or the potential to send out harmful radiation. One such item is your everyday candle. Now, candles have got an isotope of thorium, which is an alpha particle emitter. Even though it doesn't emit many alpha particles, it is potentially harmful to humans. In fact, some scientists in Australia have asked for the banning of candles, but that has been dismissed. There is no evidence that candles can be harmful to us, and in fact, the alpha radiation that comes out of candles is so small that it's almost entirely harmless to humans. So let's look at this radiation. One of the first things that we need to understand about radiation is the dose. In other words, how much of that potentially harmful radiation you receive. The dose, or we'll call it from now on absorbed dose, is measured by the amount of radiation in joules that's received by a tissue times the amount of mass of that tissue. So absorbed dose equals to the mass of the tissue times the energy of radiation that's been received. For example, if I've got a 3 kilogram piece of meat and I irradiate it with, let's say, 10 joules of gamma rays, the absorbed dose would be 3 kilograms times 10 joules. So I would receive a dose of 30 GYs. Now, I'm not sure quite how to pronounce GYs. I just pronounce it GYs. I know, pretty scientific of me, but I really don't want to embarrass myself. Now, let's look at how humans, for example, receive radiation. You'd be surprised to hear that a lot of the radiation we receive as humans is often by the background, just by the environment. 13% of all the radiation that we absorb is due to cosmic rays. 20% of our radiation that we absorb from the environment is from grounds and buildings. 17% is from our food and drink. Can you believe that? 37% is the natural radioactivity of the air. 10.4% is every now and then when we get ourselves an X-ray for medical reason. 1.6% of radiation is due to coal burning. 5% is due to nuclear weapons fallout. Yep, those pesky nuclear weapons have to spoil it for everyone. 0.5% of that radiation that we absorb every day comes from air travel. Every time you go into an airplane, remember, you're exposed to more cosmic rays. And about 0.001% is due to nuclear power generation. Now, that's all well and good in regards to the absorbed dose. We get an absorbed dose, once again, by multiplying the mass and the amount of energy received. But we know from previous episodes that every bit of radiation has got different potential to harm us. For example, we know that alpha radiation is by far the more ionizing radiation. Beta emissions can also be harmful to us, and gamma rays can also be harmful. They also have different penetrating powers. For example, alpha particles are very ionizing, but they have low penetration powers. In other words, they don't get through as much or as thicker bits of paper or aluminium, whereas beta radiation can actually get through almost a sheet of aluminium, and gamma rays will just go through just about everything apart from lead. So we need to get a scale through which we can gauge how dangerous that absorbed dose is. Welcome to the stage, the quality factor table. Now let me say from the onset that this is not a very accurate table. It is a way for us to factor in that dangerousness, I know that's not really a good English word, but the dangerousness of that radiation and to incorporate it into some sort of formula. I'll basically outline this table for you. In this table, you have the radiation on one side and the quality factor on the other side. For example, alpha particles, it's got a quality factor of 20. No surprises there. Neutrons, greater than 10 kilo electron volts, have got a quality factor of 10. So every time neutrons get emitted, the quality factor is 10. Beta particles have got a quality factor of 1. Gamma particles have got a quality factor of 1. And X-rays have got a quality factor of 1. Now, this seems pretty meaningless, but when we look at our formula of dose equivalent, it makes a bit more sense. The dose equivalent formula says this. The dose equivalent is the same as the absorbed dose times the quality factor. So let's have a look at our previous example. The previous example had a 3 kilogram piece of meat being irradiated by 10 joules of, say, gamma radiation. Now, my dose equivalent would be the absorbed dose, which we know is 30 GYs times the quality factor. So we'll look at the table and we'll find that the quality factor of gamma rays is 1. So the absorbed dose is 30 times 1. The absorbed dose is 30 sieverts, SVs. I'll call it SVs because I tend to murder the names. So 30 SVs is the dose equivalent of that radiation. Now let's say, for example, that radiation, instead of gamma rays, was alpha particles. So I've got a absorbed dose still of 30 GYs, but this time the quality factor is alpha particles. So I look at my table and I find that alpha particles have got a quality factor of 20. So I do the multiplication. 30 GYs times 20, that gives us 600 SVs, which is a massive amount of radiation. It's probably enough to barbecue that piece of meat. I wouldn't suggest eating it, but you can understand now how different amounts of radiation produce a different effect on a tissue. In this case, our piece of meat. Gamma rays, yes, it's dangerous, it penetrates it, but it doesn't have as much ionizing power. Therefore, our dose equivalent was only 30. We'd have the same piece of meat, but this time we do the same amount of radiation, but with alpha particles, and we found ourselves a barbecue. Now, before I go into the next part, it's really important to stop and think about some of the language that I'm going to be using. I'm going to be talking about micro SVs or sieverts or millisieverts. For those of you who are uncomfortable with these units, micro sieverts basically means a millionth of a sievert. Millisieverts means a thousandth of a sievert. So I'll be talking about micro and millisieverts, so I'm hoping that I'm not going to confuse you too much. Now, let's have a look at some of the stuff that happens around the world and some of the background radiation in different parts of the world. So, let's say Australia, for example. In Australia, you receive annually around about 2,000 micro SVs of background radiation, and this is an average level. Australia is an older continent, but that doesn't really make much of a difference. The background radiation has to do more with the composition of your soil, the air around it. New York in the USA has an annual background radiation dose of around about 1,000 micro sieverts. In Paris, in France, 1,200 micro sieverts. In Aberdeen, in Scotland, 5,000 micro sieverts. And Chennai, India, the winner of us all, gets about 8,000 micro sieverts. Now, we can complicate things a little bit more by giving you an idea of the effective dose. Now, the effective dose is the sum of the equivalent dose equivalent times W, which is the weighting or the factor. It basically looks at the effect of radiation on, say, different parts of the body. This is very important for medicine. For example, the ovaries or the testes have got a weighting of 0.2. Bone marrow has got a weighting of 0.12. So if you add up all that dose equivalent and you multiply it by its weighting, you can start getting an idea of the effects that that radiation has on different parts of the body. Once again, that's particularly important for medical use. Now that I'm talking about medical use, let me just put a little brackets or a stop into this conversation. And one of the questions by my students was, when people try to get rid of cancer, let's say a doctor is trying to get rid of cancer, how does the machine irradiate that cancer out without actually killing the patient? That was a very good question, I said. The reason why that does not kill the patient on the way in is because very much the similar reasons as to why in the microwave you sometimes get hot spots. You get hot spots in the microwave because there's usually three or four sources of radiation into your food. Now, sometimes when those sources of radiation or the rays of those sources cross over in your food, that radiation actually adds up and that creates hot spots. Microwaves try to lessen the effect of those hot spots by rotating your food around. And you're always being asked by microwave instructions to stir it often. So stop the microwave and stir it. The reason why you stir it is to even that heat out, to stop those hot spots from becoming too hot. You'll notice that if you leave your baked beans in the microwave, they'll start exploding every now and then because some hot spots can be created in different parts of that bowl. In a more complicated way, but probably not too dissimilar way, what doctors do is to actually focus the ray of radiation into the one particular spot. That's usually controlled by computers. So instead of having one massive, let's say, cannon of radiation going through the body and in the way destroying some of the tissue that's not cancerous, what the doctors will do is they'll split that ray into four or five different sources, which are then focused into the one area that they want to destroy. For example, if you have, let's say, a throat cancer, it's important that your neck doesn't get destroyed, but only the cancer. Now, there's only so much accuracy that doctors can have in actually focusing that ray in the one spot. So it's important for some of these to be done very accurately, and as I said before, it needs to be controlled by computers. You got five different rays, which on their own are not have not got the potential to cause much harm. But once they're focused, once they all coincide in the same spot, they actually have the ability to basically charcoal or zap that cancer out of the way. Now, more often than not, the doctors will burn off or kill off more tissue than they need to, and that's in order to prevent those cells from escaping. Once again, it's not a perfect method, but certainly a very effective method to get rid of cancers without having to cut people up and go into surgery. So let's have a look at some of the effects of this radiation. I want you to imagine that there is a molecule of water, and somewhere out of the blue comes a big potentially damaging very high energy gamma ray. What that gamma ray would do is interact with that water molecule to separate one of the hydrogens and leave hydrogen and an oxygen stuck together away from that hydrogen. Now, that has had an ionizing effect. Now you've got a charged molecule of H and an O, which is quite keen to get themselves something else. That ionization actually has caused damage to that water molecule. Now, the damage that's caused by radiation can be varied, but let's look at a thing called a somatic effects. Somatic effects arise when ordinary body cells are damaged, and depending on the size of the dose, very high doses can lead to almost immediate symptoms, whereas lower doses could lead to symptoms developing years and years later. Genetic effects of that radiation often occur when that radiation hits the ovaries or the testes and are potentially damaging to the genetics of the cell. We find that in many places where perhaps a nuclear bomb has had an effect on the population, and we do find higher incidences of birth defects where people have been exposed to that radiation. Now, if we look at the somatic effects of this radiation, let's have a look at perhaps if you receive a dose of less than one, it's often non-fatal and it's only incurs some minor symptoms. If your whole body gets a dose of about 2 sieverts, the death is very unlikely. Radiation sickness is probably likely. You'll get a bit of nausea, you'll probably get skin rashes, and your hair will actually fall off, perhaps. At 4 sieverts, you're likely to die. That's only half likelihood within 2 months, but you'll get severe radiation sickness and you'll have a high probability of leukemias and other tumors. So not a very good prospects for you. At 8 sieverts, it's almost certain that you will die within 1 or 2 weeks. You have acute radiation sickness and you often get convulsion and lethargy, which is nothing compared to you dying. So let's recap. Less than 1, non-fatal. 2, death is unlikely. 4, you have a 50-50 chance of dying. And at 8, you'll almost certainly die. Sorry to be a bit morbid about this, but it's important to understand that the effects of this radiation. Now, before we finish this podcast, I'd like to talk to you about radioactive traces. These traces are used by doctors for a variety of reasons, but one of the main reasons for using these traces is to identify whereabouts in the body the cancer exists. Now, we've talked before about how to get rid of those cancers, but to actually identify where that cancer is very important. One thing to know about this is that the body distributes fluids or liquids right around your body. So it's important, first of all, to get a radioactive isotope which has a low half-life. In other words, we can get rid of it pretty quickly. The radioisotope that's more commonly used is an isotope called technetium-99m. Now, they use this radioisotope for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons they use it is because it's a gamma emitter. What they do is they get you to drink this solution full of radioactive technetium. Doesn't sound very nice, but after all, you are suspected of having cancer. So what the body does is distributes that radioactive substance right through your body, and as a gamma emitter, you'll know from previous episodes that gamma rays have got a high penetrating power. So what they do is they put you in this chamber that has gamma ray cameras. Now those gamma ray cameras can identify where those gamma rays are coming from. They scan your whole body, and any pattern that's a bit unusual, the doctors can actually look at those patterns and be pretty sure that those unusual patterns might be due to the fact that you have a whole structure of cancerous cells in one particular part. So they can actually identify those parts and take steps to actually get rid of those. Once again, some of these radioactive traces need to be gamma emitters, and the other thing is they have to have a very small half-life. So in a couple of days, you know that you won't have any traces of the actual radioisotope in your body, and therefore making it less harmful. Harmless, I should say. Sorry, I'm just getting a bit tongue-tied at this time of the night. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Nuclear Podcast, a series of four. The next series of podcasts will deal with electricity, by far one of my favorite topics and one very interesting topics that I'm sure most of you are going to enjoy. Once again, thank you for listening to these podcasts. Thank you for the feedback. I really appreciate it. And watch out for the next episode, which will be on electricity. Thank you very much.
For the first time, we have the power to decide the fate of our planet and ourselves. This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.